This week's programmes have been about mass production and mass consumption. And today we have the rise of mass political engagement. Power is usually not given willingly, but taken. And in both Europe and America, the 19th century was punctuated by political protest, with periodic revolutions on the continent, civil war in America, and in Britain, the long, steady struggle to widen the suffrage. This programme's suffragette coin stands for all those, not only in Britain, but across the world, who in the 19th and 20th century fought for the universal right to vote. Indeed, many are still fighting. This small penny takes us deeper into the now familiar story of women's suffrage. In Britain, the process of redefining the political nation was a very slow one, beginning in the 1820s. But by the 1880s, roughly 60% of the male population had the right to vote. But no women. The campaign for women's suffrage had begun shortly after the Great Reform Act of 1832. But the battle really got going at the start of the 20th century, when the suffragette movement was born, and with it, a new level of female assertiveness, and indeed violence. The British establishment was deeply disconcerted by the spectacle of respectable women deliberately committing criminal acts. It was a big step beyond the posters, pamphlets, rallies and songs that till then had been the norm. Defacing a coin of the realm was a more subtle crime, one with no evident victims, but it was an even more effective attack on the authority of a state which excluded women from political life. As a campaigning strategy, it was, I think, a stroke of genius. The artist Felicity Pole has a special interest in subversive medals.
The idea is incredibly clever because it uses the potential that coinage has, a bit like the internet today, to be incredibly widely circulated. And so to be able to get the message out subversively into the public realm to those who would be consoled by this message, as well as those who would be shocked by it, is a brilliant idea. Wish I'd thought of it. This particular coin makes full use of the fact that coins have two sides. So there's an image of Britannia, which hasn't been defaced, an image of a woman standing there very strongly. But turn it over, and there's a real potential for shock value there, real subversion when you see what's on the other side.
On the other side is the profile of Edward VII, balding, bearded, and gazing off to the right. He's in his 60s. The coin is dated 1903. Surrounding him, running around the edge of the coin, is the Latin inscription, Edward VII, by the grace of God, King of all Britain, Defender of the Faith, Emperor of India. A mighty set of titles, redolent of ancient rights and of recent imperial power. In fact, it's an entire political order devised over centuries and claiming the sanction of God. But running across the top of the king's ear and right over his face in wobbly capital letters is the word votes. Below his ear, four, and through his neck, women. A campaigner has hammered the letters into the surface of the penny one by one, using a separate punch for each letter. 13 separate blows. The result is powerfully crude. Our Edward VII bronze penny was struck in 1903, the year of the formation of the Women's Social and Political Union, whose founders included Emmeline Pankhurst and her daughter Christabel. There had been other peaceful female pressure groups before then, but none had achieved their goal. 33 years before, Emmeline's husband had presented the first women's suffrage bill to Parliament, which did well in the Commons until Prime Minister Gladstone had declared himself against it. By 1903, the Pankhursts and others had had enough. At this point, they were still calling themselves suffragists, but after a few years of activism, the Daily Mail dubbed these new, feisty protesters suffragettes, a derisory, diminutive term, suffragette as in ladette, to distinguish them from women, ladies, who stuck to peaceful means. Under Mrs. Pankhurst's leadership, the suffragettes swung into direct action. Defacing coinage was just one tactic among many, but the choice of the penny was particularly ingenious. Pre-decimal bronze pennies, about the same size as the modern £2 coin, were big enough to carry easily legible lettering, but too numerous and too low in value to make it practical for the banks to recall them. So the message on the coin was pretty well guaranteed to circulate widely and indefinitely.